Is there any particular item you want to go over first? The thought occurred to me on the way over here. Why aren't we doing our work session, filling our work session with just the discussion items? So we just discuss during work session and we don't have it on a regular session. Tonight, to shorten your meeting a little bit, do you want to just start with those two items, the general plan and fiber?
That's all I'm thinking, is just the ones that are going to be super linked that we can meet at the time.
I don't anticipate a very long meeting tonight, but I think Ron's the one. But those ones are important, but they're kind of open-ended discussions. There's not a motion at the end of them.
Okay, I do that. Start with the general plan. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with the general plan. So by state law, the city is required to have a general plan, and as part of that general plan, we're supposed to have three elements. Those elements are a transportation element, a moderate income housing element, and a land use element. And if you look at our general plan, by state law, we're supposed to resubmit a new general plan or moderate income housing element every December. So we're working on that one to be submitted to the state in a couple months. And the transportation element is, if you think about major thoroughfares in Cedar Hills and what the future holds, 20 years from now, it doesn't look too much different than tomorrow. So the big issue, I think, is the land use element. And if you look at our current land use element, it was done in the late 90s, and it holds this vision of Cedar Hills for the next 20 years, going back 20 years ago. And you can see how well the city stuck with that idea, or deviated from it. They project some population trends, and those are kind of funny too because they're wildly off. I think they project us with a population in 2015, a population of 1,500 people. So we were, it was a little bit off, but you do what you can with the information you have. But with that being said, I think it's time that the city put out notice to the public that it intends to amend the general plan, specifically the land use element, and task the Planning Commission with redoing that. I've written a draft, which I'll submit to the Planning Commission, that really focuses on redevelopment in the city and kind of current land uses. When the original draft general plan was drafted, it really focused on large lots and the development of space, a lot of space in the community. And that's, by and large, happened in some areas it hasn't happened. But nonetheless, I think it's time to revisit that and look at our current land uses and say, how do we envision the city in the next 5, 10, and 20 years? And then the Planning Commission will make some recommendations, probably edit the document I've created, and then it'll come back to you for adoption, and we'll put it back in the new general plan. And something that was heavily talked about last week at the Utah League of Cities and Towns was the incorporation of water conservation, water saving methods into land use planning. So I think that needs to also be a focal point of any discussion we have. And so tonight, one of the items that we're going to be doing is awarding a bid on a secondary water metering system. And it's not the meters themselves, it's a few meters, but it's mostly the software hardware to be able to read meters. If we think about our current water system, we talked a lot about that last meeting, but if you imagine a triangle, it's production, storage, and then conservation. I think that the secondary water meters is really heavily in the conservation corner, where we're trying to reduce the consumption of the public. And so really what we found is metering, and when I say we, I mean cities in general, metering is the way to go. So I think it's taking those ideas of water conservation and land use planning and implementing it into a new land use element for the general plan that the city can then adopt. Is there any questions on that?
Is our ARPA money covering that?
Not this one, no. ARPA money is specifically for culinary water. So this is not where, we estimate that they...
Chandler, it can be used.
Can?
Yes.
Yes. I know you kept saying that, and I kept, no, it can be, but...
Grab my mic.
Sorry. It can be, but it only goes so far, and one of these projects is way more than... A well would cost way more than what we're getting. But if we got money from someone else that had ARPA money, like the state, someone on the water board said they are going to be offering not unlimited amounts, so our chances are slim again. But they will be offering $50 million. Sounds a lot, but when you have 100, you know, you have 1 billion in applicants, they said they'll be offering a 75% match. And I said, they offer loans at 1%. I said, well, we'll use your match over the WaterSmart grant, which is 50%, but it will apply for it, but there's no guarantee. And that they're doing that with ARPA money. So
what we're allocating tonight is, I think it's about $175,000. What is it? The total one?
Yeah. It will be $175,000 for this.
So this is just the
contract.
The contract to implement the software and hardware necessary to read meters. I think it comes with 155 meters that we'll start putting in, but it's not the meters themselves. And so what happens next is the city needs to come up with a tiered rate structure that then educates the public about, here's what you're using, and when we start billing you for water, here's what your bill will be. And so we can start producing it that way. I mean, some cities have been very successful, and I think the Weaver Conservancy District has done a great job with county, and then Saratoga Springs, you guys have done over a year and a half. What's over there?
Saratoga Springs, Spanish
Fork, and Alpine has the grant, but this is the way that all cities are moving. So I know that there's been a lot of reluctance over the last 10 years since I've been here.
Alpine's doing it next year.
Reluctance to meter, what was it?
Reluctance to meter, yes. Reluctance to meter your secondary water. A lot of cities, when they put the secondary water systems in, I think they sold it with a political campaign of use all this water. And people really don't love that and remember that. But that's just not the world we live in right now.
Yes.
We have to conserve water.
I think people understand that too.
But we are not planning on using any ARPA money for this bid tonight.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, but going back to the general plan, yes, I think it's important that we do implement water conservation, the topic of water conservation into our land use zoning, how we view land use in the city in general. So we talked a lot about non-functional turf, allowing for alternate landscaping methods, and adjusting your ordinances so that, you know, the park strips can be not grass. And by and large, we've done this already, so I think we're a little bit ahead of the curve in general in terms of where the state is, but I think there's still some work to be done. Any questions on the general plan? So next meeting, we're asking you to actually have a review action or we will allow us to achieve the amendment of, to the general plan. And then from that, it triggers calling the draft notice to a number of entities throughout the state. Okay. You want to talk about fiber?
Let's talk.
Okay. I don't normally do PowerPoints because I despise PowerPoints, but I'm going to do one tonight anyway. That's awesome. Alright, so we have, let's go over this, because I think this issue is coming to the City Council, hopefully in the next meeting or the meeting thereafter. But in April 20th of this year, the city issued a call for proposals to construct what's called a fiber to the home or a fiber to the premise network within the city. We wanted to, rather than being pigeonholed into one model, we wanted to allow for all different types of proposals, and because there's lots of different business ideas out there on how to implement fiber in your community. So we wanted to frame the RFP process into allowing any all comers, right? And so we received five responses, one of which was disqualified for not being submitted by the deadline. So from that, the City Council appointed a fiber committee. They've met a few times to evaluate the proposals and kind of evaluate what they felt was most important to them. And I'm going to be going over some of the things that they talked about. But ultimately, from the four RFPs that remain, they really focused in on two models, Utopia and Strata. And both Utopia and Strata have met with the committee. And we've submitted questions to both of these entities. Stratus submitted those back to us, so I think we have some good information there. Still waiting to hear back from Utopia. But they kind of offer a good contrast in your approach to fiber, and that's what I wanted to go over tonight. So the things that we're going to talk about is financing methods. And the reason I'm talking about this tonight is because I'm going to send you the RFP so you can read through them, and I want you to be able to understand what you're reading. So the things that we're talking about are financing methods, PON versus Active Ethernet, or GPON versus Active Ethernet, various construction methods that are being proposed, utility model versus a subscription model, and this, I think, is one of the big focal points internally to city managers when we talk about fiber is the ownership of the network. We'll get to that. And then, obviously, this is something we're committed to the long haul, so you want to talk about your operations, maintenance, and then your system refresh, which means replacing it when it goes down or needs to be upgraded due to changes in technology. So the first thing we'll start with is PON or AON. PON is a passive optical network, and the best way to describe this is through this chart. Imagine those fiber lines. If you drive through Pleasant Grove, you see them laying conduit, Utopia laying conduit in Pleasant Grove. So they're in that public utility easement, and they're not trenching, but they're directional boarding off to the site. But this is not the model that Utopia is doing. This is the Strata model, and it's called a passive optical network, or a GPON, a gigabit passive optical network. What they do is there's customers that basically share a line. So if you have a heavy user, that can take away from another's ability to use the internet. So if you have a heavy user, they come out usually in their cabinet, they replug you into a different circuit. So if you're a high user, they plug you into a different circuit that allows you to have a more dedicated network, where they try to push you to one of these higher use plans. But basically, it's like sharing the pipeline of the internet, right? So imagine a water pipe, it's basically sharing that stream. The active Ethernet is this other model here where you have a dedicated fiber line to your house. And this is the Utopia model. This is what Utopia's proposal includes. It is the active Ethernet where each home, each customer has its own fiber connection and it's not being shared with other neighbors. Right? Most cities, when they deploy fiber in their community, are deploying GPON or PON, and I believe that the reason that is it's a little cheaper to install. But if you're looking for, quality, I think you're looking probably at Active Ethernet. And so the committee will get more into this in their report that they're going to give to you. So an Active Ethernet, or an active optical network, is a point-to-point fiber access technology for delivering internet services.
And that's for speed, too.
And you get better speed.
It's
a reserved speed just for you. It's like your own road. It's not sharing that with other customers.
Yes.
The next thing I want to talk about is the utility of the subscription model, because this kind of plays into financing. In the other utility model, the financing for the payment of the network is done in a way that every person, regardless of if they want it or not, gets connected. And what that does, because you then have every resident is a customer, it lowers the monthly cost for each resident, right? But if you want to see what happens when a community does this, go check out Kaysville. When they decided that they were going to do this, people don't generally like this. It treats it as a utility, like stormwater or garbage or sewer. You have to do it, right? And people generally don't take to this, but a lot of cities are doing it. Providence, Utah, they are actually proceeding with this model. I talked to their city manager, and he got a little bit of pushback from a couple of residents, but by and large, I think people were supportive of it. Now, I don't know what their internet options are up in that area, but it was surprising to me that he didn't get more pushback. So, given that your understanding of City Girls politics, I think you can guess what the response would be to say everyone would be connected. The subscription model does it a little different. It requires that a certain percentage of your residents sign up. So of your percentage of your potential users that be subscribed, and typically Utopia, this is the Utopia model again. The subscription model or utility model, Strata is willing to entertain both. The Utopia model, I think they're willing to entertain both, but they've historically only done subscription. But in order to pay off the debt service on the bond, you usually have to get between 35% and 40% of a take rate in your community. So each user pays that fee, and that fee is split between their monthly maintenance, operations cost that goes to Utopia, and then ISP fee that goes to the internet provider. So if the take rate falls below the required threshold that you see here, or whatever is required by the bond, the city has to cover that shortfall through monies in the general fund. And they're limited in what monies you can use, but the city, in its agreement with Utopia, would have to dedicate, in the event that it falls below a certain threshold, certain funds to make up that difference. However, with Utopia, it does become almost a short-term loan in that if you do have to use your general fund monies to make up that shortfall, you can get paid back when you reach a point above that take rate. So you can get those funds back. Construction methods. I know this came up in some conversations with the mayor and some residents, but there's two proposals here. The Strata proposal, their amount includes what's called micro-trenching. So imagine a bandsaw going straight down the street, right? It makes this cut, and this is a profile view of the asphalt. It makes a cut in the asphalt, and usually this is, I think they go a little bit deeper than what this is showing. They try to go down below the asphalt and beneath the road base so that you're out of where they're, if you're reconstructing a road, you're out of the area of reconstruction. But you cut into your road and you put the conduit there at the bottom, and then you fill it. This gray is what's called flowable fill, so it doesn't expand and contract as weather, so it tries to keep the water out. Because if you want to have really bad roads, put cracks in roads. And then on the top, they put a sealer. It's more than just what you see as a crack sealer. It's a little bit more sturdy than that. But that's what's called micro-trenching. The Strata model is proposing micro-trenching as far as their construction method. The other method is the use of public utilities. And so I was going to take a picture of all the work that's being done through Pleasant Grove, but you've probably already driven past it and seen what they're doing. So you'll see that they have these ditch witches, these small back trucks that have a 6-inch hose, and they'll do a pothole at a utility easement, and they'll directional bore along that easement through the length parallel to the street, and they'll pull that conduit through, and they'll put in a utility box. And some people really hate that because they end up with a new utility box in their flower bed, but that's what the public utility easement is for. It's for these types of projects. So it's a lot slower than micro trenching and a little bit more expensive. But in the end, I do believe this is a better method in that you're not left with damaged roads.
Right. Can you say that again? It's more expensive. And
slower.
Slower.
Yes.
But you think it's better because
you're not damaging your roads. When I was learning about roads from David, the previous city manager, he said that there's three things you need to keep in mind about roads: drainage. You have to get the water off your road. So if the concern with micro-trenching is that if this seal is not done right, then you've got water that free comes in here, freezes, and pops that hole, and all of a sudden you've got potholes all along where you're micro-trenching. So the Strata model proposes micro-trenching. They're willing to, I think they've given us some information about what the difference in price would be for directional boring. I think they just said, we've done this before, it's been successful. I recognize that. But I don't think that this is something the city should do. I don't believe that it's best for our roads. Directional boring is a little bit messy. It makes people upset because they're in their yard. They do a good job of putting the easement back together. But that's what the easement's for, is to be able to put these types of utilities in.
But would Strata do this one as well?
They would, yeah. They could, yes. Financing methods. So in either case, the city is... In either case, the city is really ultimately responsible for the payment on the bond. That doesn't change whether you go with Strata or whether you go with Utopia. The difference is in the financial benefit. And we're going to kind of lead into ownership of the network. If the city owns the network, then any financial gain from having a really high take rate stays with the city. But a prudent thing to do with that money would be to set it aside in reserves for system refresh. I talked to a few city managers that are with Utopia, and Utopia's been around for 16 to 18 years. And in that 16 to 18 years, these network cabinets that you see here that kind of house the equipment, here, these big black boxes, they replace those already 3 times in some instances. So in order to stay on top of emerging technology, you have to continually reinvest in your network. The reason that I bring this up is because the Strata model, and in the RFP you can dive into this a little bit deeper, but in the Strata model, you set aside money from each customer for network operations, maintenance, and refresh. And I think that there's a hope that if there's enough money there to pay for the refresh when it needs to happen. In all honesty, if you're looking to do, this is my opinion, I'm trying to keep my opinion to a minimum, but in my opinion, if you're looking to do a fiber project for a financial benefit to the city, think through the state. I do not believe that the size of Cedar Hills warrants that much money. I met with Springville, they're very different. They built their fiber network prior to the change in Utah State Code's Telecommunications Act, so they can't do what they do. They're actually the internet service provider in their community as well. But there's a financial benefit for them. It's almost like they're the power company, and they own the power lines, and they own the power being sent. But in this case, we cannot be the ISP. We're simply building infrastructure that ISPs use. So if you're thinking that there's a financial gain to the city to do all these other grant projects, I just don't think that you're doing it right. Because any money you make from that, I think, needs to be set aside for system refresh if you own the network, right? With the Utopia model, it's, again, the city backstops the bond. We're in charge of this. But on the Utopia model, the debt financing is delayed. So this black line represents the debt financing. So the first few years, I think it's the first 2 years, there's no principal payments, right? So you hold any money you get in reserves, and that's what this green line is. This green line is your take rate. So during this year, you're getting payments from all these people that are signing up for your service, and this difference between this green line and the black line is the money you're setting aside in reserves in anticipation of that first debt payment at year two. And that first debt payment comes in at year two, you're likely under your needed take rate, but because you've held so much in reserves, you're able to pay this bond off without having to dip into your general fund. And then the idea is that by year four, you're above your take rate, but the difference is that any money that you receive in excess of your bond payment goes to Utopia. Again, and that puts the system maintenance, operations, and refresh on their dime, right? I think that was it. Yeah. Any questions? I think we've already talked a little bit about the network. We can talk more about this in council meeting, but I'll reserve questions until the end of the term. Time to Senator Kennedy. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you very much. I know there's some residents coming who are interested in the discussion. I mean, we might have to have an end.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's
all right. But yeah, thank you, Senator Kennedy, for coming. I'd like to turn the time out over to Senator Mike Kennedy. He's going to give some updates and let us know what's going on in the state.
Thanks. And I'm happy to be here. Thank you very much. I understood I was supposed to be here at 6:30.
You're right on time.
Okay, good. I was making sure I wasn't 30 minutes late. So the first thing, thank you for your service. Thanks to the citizens for all that they do to make this place a beautiful place. I come here and I look out these windows. Don't we live in a cluster area? It's a great thing to visit with you. First thing I want to make sure that you get is my cell number. So I'd like all of you to feel open to connect with me at any point that you have an interest. My day job and also this political work that I do is I know enough to know that I don't know enough. It's really true. I hope and I feel like you feel the same. There's just too much for any one person to do. And as a representative, I represent about 30,000 people, and I represent about 100,000 people. And there's magnitudes associated, not with tasks and opportunities, but just knowledge to try to gather. So I'm Mike Kennedy, I'm the senator. I was December elected. My cell number is 385-268-9458. And I'd love you to text me or call me if you have any comments or questions, because I need you to be part of my information base as far as what's happening in Cedar Hills and the things that you're doing, the things that we can do on a state level to make sure that that place at the Utah Capitol is working well for you. And I hope that our federal representatives and senators are also doing the same, because they should be making sure Washington, D.C. works for us. I've always felt strong that the government should serve the people, and the people serve the government. Frankly, a lot of what I hear and feel coming out of Washington, D.C., is disturbing, because I just feel like we're trying to take over a lot of aspects of our lives. At a minimum, it's, let's take a lot of money out of your pocket and put it in our government coffers so we can do things that we think are better for you than what you would do for yourself. I disagree with that. I trust you to take the tax dollars, see your bills, and use that for these good citizens better than I do in the state capital. So my efforts are to keep the state out of your business. When we need to get in your business, let's do it with your collaboration and make sure that it's working for you. I don't know any of you, I don't know all of you, but I'd like to be a partner with you to serve the people of Cedar Hills and also the people of my Senate District 14 as well. So updates, the session is now, we get out in March, so it's 7 months old at this point. I think you know kind of what's happened in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of things happening there. I'm looking forward more than I'm looking backward. I'm happy to take any questions that you may have about what has happened, although it's kind of penetrated as to what has happened. What I'm looking forward to, there's a variety of things that are happening. I'm deeply involved in making sure that Utah County is protected. I'm looking at Utah Lake right now. There's a proposal on the table at Utah Lake Authority that you've probably heard rumblings about. Representative Brammer, who took my seat when I left in 2018, and he and I are collaborating. He's actually the primary driver of what's happening there, and I'm really interested in making sure that we don't have some state-created entity that's independent of Utah County, independent of Cedar Hills, independent of the areas that we value Utah Lake, and of course it has problems as well. So I'm really invested in making sure that whatever happens with Utah Lake Authority, which I've not seen concrete proposals, but I've heard rumblings of how that's going to look. But I want to make sure that we create that process, not a couple of us create that process. So whatever is happening, I'd like your input as to that. I've not seen any drafts, but I've had concerns from Mayor America's Ford, Brad Frost. We met about 2.5-3 weeks ago. I met with him. I've also heard concerns from Lyndon. I was there with him last week about that. And so I presume on some level you're interested in that. So I'm looking forward to that, and I hope we, myself, you, are going to hear concrete proposals with collaboration for Representative Brammer for you to move forward. And, as a doctor, I'm deeply invested in healthcare things, the opioid epidemic. One thing that's happening is a bunch of money dumped on the state. It's coming out of that. And I serve as the chair of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. So meaning if you have any thoughts about how we can spend whatever money is coming to us, that's not concrete at this point, but I'd be interested in your input, because substance abuse, the devastating effects of opioids, and the continued effects of other substances are there to know for us. The train wreck that I'm really disturbed about, the $3.5 trillion infrastructure proposal. I don't believe our country has the money, but whatever money might be coming to us. One part of me says, don't spend it, it's not real. The other side says, well, we do have needs and the money's there, and if we give it to these people, they will do things. Contractors will build roads for us if we use that. And so we did, I do have deep interest in making sure infrastructure is good. One of the projects we worked on last time was 1600 North Alarm, making sure that from State Street down 915, that's expanded. That's a very expensive project. And where the new Warm Temple is going, that was another Geneva Road. A lot of money invested in those two projects, and I'm sure there will be others. And if you have comments or suggestions about how infrastructure needs can be met as possible when it comes to us, I'd be interested in your input. Mike, yeah, go ahead, please. Let's start with your questions.
I got to be ready for questions.
I could ramble on, but I don't know if it's what you want.
I would just like to get your take on what do you think about a condo up there?
It's really funny because I started in 2013 with Gary Geeby talking to me about that.
Gary pushed it pretty hard.
He did, and he was working with me, and it got blown up by Preserve and Protect America Fort Canyon. And I think some of the meetings that Gary had here stimulated the opposition. Mayor Geeby was right. We love that canyon to death, and it is so. I don't know if you've taken Alpine Loop lately. It's obviously a preferred opportunity with the fall colors. My sister-in-law was just up there Sunday, and as she was coming down, she counted 300 cars coming up. It's like, so we, the Kennedy family, thought, we are not going up Alpine movement at this point, it's dangerous. I've always, the runners and the bikers, they're inches away, so I think something needs to be done, like, and frankly, I'll say as a person that's interested in disabled people, senior citizens, something like a gondola resonates with me, because, we don't want that because, say, some people, I want to go hiking in that area and biking. Well, there's a lot of people that can't, will never be able to do that unless we make those kind of things available. So how we do that, of course, we're dealing with that at Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon out there in those areas. We need to have a lot of collaboration and conversation, but as this area continues to grow, that canyon is being overrun and possibly damaged permanently. I'm not set on gondolas. I don't really like the idea of trains or buses going up there either, or forbidding people from just driving in the cars. So I don't have a straight answer for you, Mike, because I don't know what the right thing to do is. I think we're all going to have to work together.
I don't either. I kind of favor the, I mean, I have a handicapped child as well, so you would never hike those mountains ever, but that's not an overriding issue. But something has to be done. It's way too crowded. I think it's too, I don't think we're going to just widen the road. I don't think that's going to help it. And I just think we've got to do something. And a gondola seems the least intrusive to me. It really
I like the electrical component. I love the idea of being elevated above. I like the quiet. It's not going to
quieter.
The thing that's shocking, so you may know that we're talking about Dixie State University name change. It's a mess. And what was funny about that conversation is still coming up. Anyways, I get tired of state mascots, state rock, state names of state universities. Really, is that the best thing that a bunch of us have to do going up? But there's reasons for that. I don't want to waste my time on that. However, when we had that conversation, there's somebody that was saying, yeah, when Utah State University turned from Utah State Technical College, Utah State University, my grandparents never forgave the people that made those decisions. Like, you know what? I don't care who you are or what you're proposing. Someone's going to hate the idea. And so you and I both know, and I frankly like gondolas. I think that would be a beautiful way to mostly preserve, but also transport massive amounts of people up and down instead of not always through the cars.
Well, actually,
but somebody's going to
clean us.
And I appreciate you bringing that up, because who should lead the way on that conversation with places like Cedar Hills? You live in that area. All of us are, we live nearby, but this is your territory. And if you've got ideas or thoughts, I'm not proposing any bills that are going to mandate or dictate.
I just think
I'm sensitive to that.
In the floodplains of Highland and Cedar Hills, right, as we come out of the tank, there's a lot of parking. It just doesn't affect anybody, really. I mean, we're not in anybody's neighborhood.
I agree. The e-bikes, it's really interesting to think of that road becoming a, yeah, you want to get on an e-bike or a fast golf cart or whatever, we're going to be going up and down, it's going to be quiet, and we don't have a bunch of, I don't know, 60-foot trailers towed by a huge diesel engine. I don't know what's
going on. It's a tough thing. I mean, there's going to be tons of opposition, no matter what you do, honestly.
True.
And it's interesting because some of the group really supports the green thing, but then they don't want anything, so just more cars? That doesn't make it any green.
You know what's interesting is we always just want what we want. Meaning, I know people that they just drive up there and it's good for them. As long as it works for me, that's good enough. I just say, well, there's a million other people that might be interested in this, and they don't necessarily have the same needs as you. So I'm open to continue conversations. We've been working on that almost 10 years now, I guess. So.
The other issue would be that at Crossroads, they're turning left from Canyon, being that
yes.
We live right here.
Yes.
We have to go time it four times past weekend because it was so busy. And it normally takes maybe 2 minutes at the most. So it took us 9 minutes one time, 12 minutes, and the worst one was 16 minutes.
Signal
is
back. We are getting
a
light. There's a signal.
But
how's
it
when?
When?
Yeah. Okay.
Anybody?
The signal's interesting. I didn't know one was coming, but it's a good point. That whole congested area is bad. I think SR-92, Representative Dougal, I think they did a good thing with SR-92, but it did bring a bunch of people on the mountain, businesses, and it's a straight shot. So as Dee said, it's worth above the can. Need to have a 50-year plan. I don't know the idea. Thank you for that. Other questions they have?
Thank you for being here, Brian.
Thanks for your time.
And I recently met with David Litvak and Angie Pina, DSP. And I'll just make my pitch because I'm going to tell anybody who will listen. We would really appreciate funding the DSP waitlist. It's been, I think, several years now since it's been funded. We've had a son with autism that's been on the waitlist several years now, and we've kind of given up hope and been pretty discouraged about even updating DSPD on how things are going, because, like, what's the point? But, you know, I can attest that there's a lot of families that struggle with kids with disabilities and can use support and some services. I know that it's a fight for a pie, a piece of the pie, and everybody wants something funded. And
including places like, no offense, but Desert Star Playhouse. It's, if you look at the bill of bills at the end of the session, that's what they call it, that's what we call it. It is disturbing to think that your child is subject to decisions that we're making. And I'll just say on my part, I guess I'm making, because I have to vote for this thing, but it's a horse trading process, you can imagine. But seriously, there's money that has gone to Desert Star Playhouse in years past, and not to the DSPD waitlist. So it's a top priority for me. Every year I'm trying to get more money put into that, and we are trying to put more money into that, but if you're fairly functional, you will be low on that list. I've had luck, and maybe we should have personal conversations, because sometimes it's like, ESPD, I know these people, could you help Senator Kennedy work on this so that he can get some help? Sometimes those things help to move things ahead, but there are thousands of people on that list, and it's never going to end. I know that that's true, but at the same point, I'm on social services and appropriations as well, and we are constantly having conversations about how we can shrink that list, even though we know it's never going to help do it entirely. Thanks.
Thank you. That's my pitch. I appreciate you listening.
Well, you got the cell number too, if you want to have conversations and see if there's some way I can start to leverage that process. Although it's always interesting. The needs, it's a sliding scale needs. Some people are deeply in need and others are in need, but less so. So, yeah, thanks.
Just Jennifer and I were interested in asking the director of ESPD just what percentage of the waitlist was autism spectrum? I think it's 40%.
Oh,
so it's, I would guess it's probably the largest grouping, but you know, there's so many other people with needs as well. And you know, just as you're talking about you know, what autism is a spectrum, it's for the people with much higher needs, some people that maybe only just need some occasional support.
Also, you've seen the State Developmental Center, the development going on there, and that money, and I've always envisioned, since I've been doing this since 2013, and so it's almost 10 years, and I've always been sensitive that land is very valuable, and that's all you get, and once that's gone, it's over. But there is, I think, a vast opportunity to leverage that land to put it into the Developmental Center Fund, which can then be allocated to individuals. We, Margaret Date and myself, Dan Hammer, we've been working to try to make sure that money is protected, that's not taken put in the Desert Star Playhouse and Salt Lake City. It is actually put into the needs of these individuals. And my vision for that is that these individuals stay with their families, they stay in their communities. We don't want them warehoused in institutions. We want them to be able to stay with their families. But families like yours, if we can augment your personal support with additional professional support, things get a lot easier, and all of a sudden we don't have to do all of it for this person. You can do some of it, we can do it. But we're talking on the same wavelength, and I will continue to fight to minimize that list of pitching and others like you that help me. Other questions you might have?
I would just add to that I've also got a son with autism. The family's a teenager, and I've been lucky enough to have private insurance and resources to get him to a spot where he is extremely functional. So the value of that extra support it becomes invaluable over time. So if there's a active money there, it would help out so many people.
Thank you. Are you on the list as well?
I am not. I don't feel we need to be on the list, but I know the impact. So I've been able to do it. I've been very lucky with my career to have private formal resource insurance that cover those things. So that's I would echo it.
What's interesting about that, I was against it in concept, mandates to insurance to cover autism services. That is one of about 2015 that we were fighting out. I'm not a big fan of mandates on businesses. Businesses make decisions when they should. But in that case, the mandate passed. I'll say it to my no vote because I didn't want a mandate to insurance. Looking back, it's been fairly nominal to the premiums and the insurance companies. It's been a big deal to give additional insurance coverage to these individuals. So my fairly hard stance in the kind of mid parts of that decade, maybe softening up, there is a place to say, yeah, we're going to push in one of the ones in general. Other questions any of you might have?
Mayor, I'm not a member of the council. Can I ask the representative a question?
With mayor's approval, I can't hear you.
Go ahead.
I'm Craig Hall, city attorney. Representative Craig Hall.
I was just good. I love Craig. I was wondering, it's like, there must be relations.
Yeah, there is. Turned out much better than I did.
He's a good boy. You should be proud of Judge Hall.
Except, I want to clear his role at Lake Powell. I don't
know. Craig and I enjoyed the legislation
the other day. My question is this. I sit on the Youth Parole Authority. When the last legislature extended the authority of juvenile justice services to keep young people in our program until age 25. There are no programs from the time they graduate from high school to get a GED in our program and age 25. I had a hearing today. This absolutely fucked the crap out of me. He's 19 and a half, and he's going to be there a while because of the offenses he committed, which were horrendous. So what do we do with him for the next 6 years? I don't expect an answer today, but I would like to ask you if you talk to Brett and the other people on the JJS and ask them what the vision is for the future, because staff is frustrated and we on the Youth Parole Authority are frustrated. Because there's a gap, you know.
We have the obligation, but we don't have programs to meet the obligation.
Meaningful
for that piece of time between your same 19 and 25 years old.
19, 25, 20, since they graduate from high school, because we have a great educational program until they graduate. And we've talked about some carpentry programs, some other trade, vocab, that sort of thing. But there's a hole, a very big hole there that we need to fill, or we need to change the law and give them an opportunity.
Thanks. Nobody's talking about that. So this is where the view that you have in the world, it's not the view that I have, and it's because we just have different life experience, but I'd love to continue the conversation. Right now we're working on substance abuse recovery. We've got a couple of experts that we've opened at Hillflop that in the next 4 weeks, they're helping me draft some components of working on that area. But I guess my point is that justice reform and the opportunities to work there is that I hope that community would build a consensus amongst them, knowing what they know about that world, and bring it to us. Same ideas that we don't know everything, but working with people that know, we can consider filling those gaps. Thanks for bringing that up. These are vulnerable.
I'll give you a card for you.
I'm sorry, what?
I'll give you a card.
Let me give you my cell number too, and I'll take a card. 385-268-9458.
Yeah, I just have a question. So we just got finished with ULCG conference this last week, and I felt like the entire conference, I felt like the girl on the naughty set, because we don't provide high-density, low-income housing in our city, and the state is being so pushy about asking cities to provide that element for the population. And I'm just wondering where this one-size-fits-all idea comes from. Like, people come to live in Cedar Hills and Highland.
Because it's not high density, yes.
Yeah,
Right. So we don't provide that in our city, and we're being asked to provide it. We don't have anywhere to provide it. We're almost completely built out, almost completely. And so people move to certain cities because they want a certain lifestyle. And so when the state comes down and says, you need to add this to your city, it's a little frustrating. So I just want to know, like, the mindset of, is there a possibility to exempt people from this requirement? Like, we don't even have a transportation corridor. We don't have a bus stop in our city, which are things that people who live in high-density low-income housing need to survive, to get to their jobs, to do these things. And so my question is, where does the line get drawn? You know what I mean? It's like, where does the way we planned our city get protected from these mandates?
It comes from bringing that up to your representatives and senators and making sure that we're aware of them voting down those things and what infringe on your capacity to set the standards for your backyard. So I'm sensitive to that, living where I live, and I'm not interested in dictations coming out of the state capitol down to you, just like I'm not interested in Washington, D.C. telling us how to live our lives. So are you saying that you're being induced or forced, or is this...
Almost every class we went to, it's like, here's what you need to provide. You're not, there should be punishments. And
that's
those
right.
Who do it
I'm
should
gonna...
be rewarded. And I'm just sitting there like, first of all, we can't. Like, how are you going to punish us? Like, take our money? Like, you can fine us? Like, I think that's where it's going. And so that's really frustrating.
So Mary Anderson is a high performer, and she tries to strive to accomplish everything she knows that she should do. And I just say to you, ignore those sort of comments, because the one size fits all is always been disturbing to me. Freedom, liberty, justice, those are universal standards that we should adhere to when it comes to zoning ordinances in cities. I trust cities to direct those processes. And so that's where I need your help. So I was just checking this number. We passed 502 bills in 45 days. It's like, if you start doing the numbers, it's a lot. And that's only the bills that we passed that I had to vote on. There's a bunch that we kill in committee, and then they come out and somebody looks at them, but they don't move forward for whatever reason. So if you're aware of any bills that look like they're angling in, and League of Cities and Towns, we call them Legion. So I'm Legion means you can't really negotiate with League of Cities and Towns because it's like 10,000 entities and everybody's
going to be. So we call ourselves an army.
Army and Legion, however you want to say it. But I am very sensitive to representing diligently this area, because Alpine, Highland's got some, obviously, but
yeah.
And I know you have some as well up here on the hill, but
yeah.
Reality is these areas.
That's not low income. Identity isn't always equal low income, and so that's the other thing that's true.
So. When you get these proposals for little houses, and if you put little houses in the backyard, then what are you going to do for parking? Because they're not making their cars necessary. So. Yes, I'm not interested in punishments. Of course, if somebody wants to try to adhere to that standard, then fine.
Sure.
And maybe we could do inducements if we think it's necessary. But that's not going to work for every entity.
I appreciate that.
Any questions?
I don't have a question, but I appreciate you having the board together for years on education stuff. So I have always appreciated your collaborative interest and your ability to benefit. Take more information and make different decisions.
Education is a great example. I know a lot about certain areas of my life, but I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. I was taking care of a patient today as a teacher. And I said to her, she mentioned, my patients do that sometimes. I said, legislators, she's French, and I like working with them. I said, you are the teacher. I'm no good at telling you how to do this. But honestly, this is where the developers will show up to the biggest cities and towns and say, you need. Identity housing. Why? Because I can make a ton of money building these identities. Anyways, and then I got a guy who's telling me, Senator Kennedy, you need to pass this bill that tells teachers how to teach. You know, he's talking about evolution. And he's going to come to me in the next 2 or 3 weeks after I asked him to do this. I don't know. Look, teachers can, they already have this figured out. They can teach as they wish. Why is it that we should pass laws to tell teachers how to teach, or doctors how to doctor, or cities how to control? anyways, I know enough to know that I don't know enough, and I think that state cap will always make fun of us, is altitude causes altitude sickness and that thing so clearly. So we all live at about 3,000 feet. It's a little higher here, but when you drive up to Salt Lake City and get on that hill, and then I go up to the fourth level of the Capitol building, we're probably about 5,000 feet, and that can cause real confounding thinking. And then we sign off on these ridiculous bills. So I'm trying to hold the line on some of the dumb ideas. There's a lot of dumb ideas that are out there. I'm sorry. So.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. I don't want to take a lot of your time, but I'm certainly working on other things. But please be in touch if you've got thoughts or questions. Thanks, Mayor, for inviting me. I want to come here after every session, and I'm hoping to come here and give a report. Some kind person from the Cedar Hills Family Festival invited me. We're out of town to be part of the parade. I love being in the parade. It's actually, my family's like, no, don't do the parade, because so it is a bunch of work for us, but I love to be with the people. And so thank you for being great people yourselves, and please be in touch with me if there's ways I can speak.
Thank you.
Well, I'll give
you
some more time.
I appreciate that.
Thanks for
having
me.
Thank
you.
Yeah, have a good night.
You too. Okay, that was our last item for the work session. So we're going to, I will entertain a motion to adjourn the work session. Thank you, Councilmember Elder. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Councilmember Smith. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, that's unanimous. We'll adjourn, and we will come back in about 6 minutes to start our regular session.